The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Let's just say they kept it in their pants this time. Radio
X. All right, Vin.
Hello.
This is the Evening Show podcast, isn't it?
It is.
I'm not going to surprise you with anything. No revelations at all today.
Okay, phew, I'm nervous.
Well, Mumford & Sons came in this week.
Mm.
And neither of us seemed like we were dressed for the occasion. I wondered if I should have come in some tweed.
Yeah, I was going to grow my moustache out. But
is it a misconception, do you think, about Mumford & Sons?
Well, they have changed, haven't they?
They have a bit, yeah. Yeah.
I was listening back to that third album, the second and third album, and it's big guitars and big choruses, and they haven't actually been the banjo band for quite a long time, have they?
Well, that is the thing. Everyone just assumes that they are a banjo band with a double bass on stage,
yeah,
tweed and flat caps, but actually, I think they're now entering U2 status.
They're flight jackets type band now, aren't they?
They're going to have more than 20 trucks on tour with them. They're going to be more LEDs,
yes,
and a little bit more leather, maybe.
I think so, yeah.
But yeah, they popped in to see us this week, so that's on the podcast today. You can also hear a little bit of Vin's favourite band on the Evening Show podcast, Block Party. I know you're going to go and see them on the next little tour they're doing. Silent Alarm and
Fool.
That's
right, yeah, yeah, yeah. And we looked at the second album for our classic album, didn't we?
Yeah, A Weekend in the City, which I think is probably up there in your top 10 of all time.
It's got to be. So I know, back to front, yeah.
You'd have been 2007, so Vin would have been, what, 16, 17?
Something like that, yeah, yeah.
Perfect age to fall in love with an album,
yeah,
isn't
exactly,
it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So we had a little look at that in Classic Album Chat on Monday and a few other stories that caught my ear and caught my eye. Stick around for the Evening Show podcast.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Got two very exciting guests in the studio this evening. Ben Lovett and Ted Duane, they are from one of the most successful bands the country's produced in the last 10 years. And remarkably, they're both still standing. They've not ripped each other's eyeballs out or had a fight after recording another album after 10 years. So congratulations, lads, on surviving 10 years.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks. We may have had some fights there.
Yeah.
We haven't. I'm just offended that you assumed that we hadn't.
Well, I'm just thinking it's remarkable after 10 years that you're both still so happy together.
We're looking all right, aren't we?
Yeah, there's not a single injury. No plaster visible that I can see.
No, that's true.
Pretty good to be back here.
It's good to have Ben. Well, listen, you kind of live here anyway. You've got a show on Radio X every now and then. When Maz from Communion...
It's Maz's show.
Well, we call it the Ben Lovett Show, which Maz stands in for every now and again. But yeah, you do a good job of that, Ben. Thanks for doing that on Radio X.
Hey, you're very welcome.
And
I'll take it.
I should apologise for Maz as well. I feel bad that you have to know that, man. So Maz does the Communion show on a Sunday night from 10 o'clock every week. All the hair on his body's in the wrong place, Ben, which I've never understood. But you've known him since you were kids, is that right?
Yeah, it was the same back then.
Yeah,
Born that way.
Born the wrong way around. But he told me a great story, and you can tell me all about this. They used to go around to your house and dress up in clothes from your wardrobe and do sort of fashion shows around the house. And he said... Your dress sense is a little bit questionable.
Fashion tips for Maz Tipuni is a rich idea. Let me just put it like that.
When you came around to the house, though, and you played those games, you used to say you played hide and seek as well, Ben.
You're really like destroying our whole childhood. Yeah, our quaint childhood of dressing up and doing fashion shows and play hide and seek. I remember it being that everyone used to come over, would like get slabs of beer. And then,
well, that's kind of how I remember it. I think I might have joined in at the right time. I sort of got there when we were sort of 19, and
it was
things
sardines,
had moved on a
sardines,
little bit.
Sardines, not hide and seek.
Yes.
Yeah. Important difference.
Loads of girls.
Yeah, there were. There was like four or five
girls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like still 80 lads.
Yeah. Great odds.
Great odds.
No, you're here for a reason other than to laugh at Maz from the show on a Sunday night. New album is on the way. It's just about on the horizon. Mm-hmm. And we get to speak to a lot of bands on the point of those albums coming out. Now, can you articulate the emotion as you reach this stage of your career? Is it still the same?
Before we talk about the album...
Go on, hit me with it.
I just want to back up. Can we talk about Noel Gallagher's birthday party?
Yes.
Can you just talk us through exactly how he ended up naked in a pond at the end of the night?
Oh, that was his wedding.
His wedding, was it?
That was embarrassing. Yeah, that was me.
Talk us through it.
Let's have a little step by step.
Well, at the end of the night, there were pints of whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pretty much the last man standing.
Congratulations.
Thanks for that. I'm quite proud of that, his wedding.
Well done.
Quite well.
And have you ever been in water when you've had too much to drink?
I have, yeah.
It's exhilarating.
It's, I would say, terrifying.
Yeah.
And I found myself in a duck pond, unable to swim. And all I could see was Russell Brand, who's sober as well, looking at me, shaking his head.
Yeah.
Oh, no!
So technically, Russell was the last one standing.
He was getting up. It was the next morning.
He was going for a job.
He was getting up. He was up doing yoga. Ben, were you there?
I wasn't there, no. I just wanted to, like, balance out.
We have sources.
Like,
we didn't want to come in here unarmed.
Yeah. I can't ever hide and seek with me, fancy clothes.
Yeah.
Oh, it ended up in the Daily Mirror. They said there was a terribly badly behaved man who ended up in the duck pond. That was me.
That's quite a good rock and roll story.
I'll take that. It wasn't bad. I'll tell you the full Technicolor version of it in a little while. Tell you what, now that you've gone off on tour, I'm going to come and trouble you on tour with Maz and see how much trouble we can get.
Find some duck ponds.
Speaking of, how well behaved are you when you tour Mumford & Sons, generally speaking?
It seems to vary immensely from night to night. Sometimes it's so civilised, and other nights it's so uncivilised.
It depends where we're going, really.
It depends where we are in the world, what day of the week it is, if it was a good gig.
Yeah.
And who else is around? We're quite lucky. We have lots of friends come hang out with us.
Yeah.
Most of them are absolutely terrible influence. But,
Do you just get a little list of the people who are coming that night and think, oh no?
Yeah, sometimes.
Any names you can give us?
I can name you some cities.
Right, well, that's good, actually. Where's the danger zone?
Los Angeles is a dangerous stop.
Yeah.
Nashville can be a bit.
Nashville's very dangerous.
Berlin always seems to go a bit weird.
Berlin is ridiculous, isn't it? Ridiculous.
Berlin, we're planning what we're doing after the gig before we're doing the set list. So, like, you're already, five hours in your mind beyond the show.
I ended up in a club there where everybody was dressed as an air hostess or air steward from Pan Am. Wow. That was a bit odd, but very good as well.
Everybody except you.
Yeah, well, that's right, actually, yeah. So I was a customer all evening.
Are you sure you weren't just getting a flight?
It was a single.
Yeah. It was an airport, you're right. So, back to business. So, the album's coming. Yeah. Can you articulate the feelings as this is about to come out?
It's a strange sensation because we've been sort of locked away in a studio in North London for the last while, quite a few months, with Paul Epworth, who's an absolute legend, making this record. And now, suddenly, it's about to be sort of unleashed on the world. So, it's like, it is quite a scary feeling, but we're really proud of what we've made. So you can sort of stand beside it and, you know, be excited for it and excited for people to hear it.
Great. So there's a confidence, a simmering confidence, which is good.
Well, we've enjoyed it. That's the main thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it's fun.
Yeah.
Well, I think that reflects in the music, doesn't it? It sounds absolutely massive.
Cool.
You can already hear this in stadiums, or stadia, if we're being correct about it. It's going to be exciting, isn't it? Right, so for the very first time on Radio X, we're going to have this a huge, huge play right now. Guiding Light from Mumford & Sons on Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Right, Mumford & Sons, that's Guiding Light on Radio X from the new album Delta. I have got Ted and I've got Ben Lovett in the studio with me right now. We're having a lovely old time. Lads, I need your help and your advice on a grown-up matter.
Mm.
You're multi-instrumentalists, which is easy for me to say at this time of night. My wee boy's 8 years old and he's being asked what instrument he'd like to play.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give him some wise advice?
Don't play the double bass. It's really big and you've got to carry it around.
Carry
it's a
that
nightmare.
Around. Yeah, yeah.
It's a disaster. The last 10 years of my life have been awful.
Got a bad back.
Bad back, sore wrists. It's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
So what happened for me was I was playing piano. And then, just as he get into puberty, I know he's a bit young for that, right? But he needs to get a head start. So I realised I had to play drums to impress the girls. So I rapidly tried to learn the drums much better. And so I reckon if he wants to have a really good age 12 to 15, he should get on the drums now.
Drums first.
Drums first, definitely drums. And then he can move into something like melodic afterwards, but be the cool guy.
That's solid advice, that, isn't it? I've got to ask you about this as well, because I hope this sounds like it's going to go down the right way here. As anybody who likes your music, who you'd rather didn't like your music. Now, I get the feeling that some people in America at the moment, maybe Trump fans, might love Mumford & Sons.
And non-Trump fans too.
Yeah, non-Trump fans too. But have you ever heard somebody publicly saying, I'm a huge fan of Mumford & Sons? I remember it happened with David Cameron years ago.
Yeah, I thought that's where you were going with that. Yeah. That was my first thought. I was like, oh man, bring that up.
Do those things happen when you just think, oh, God, why has that happened?
I think it's all right. Honestly, I think there's a lot of the time we don't agree with what people are doing either in their careers or what, you know, but it's like we can't prescribe who likes our music.
Of course.
And often you don't have the right end of the stick about someone. So I don't know David Cameron. I just don't like the way that he did his job.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't want someone who does their job in a certain way to not be able to listen to our music.
Of course.
So we believe that, like, everyone's welcome.
Yeah.
We've always said that. That's like our whole mantra at the moment, especially with this next. We're going to be announcing some shows soon, and it's like as soon as you arrive at the show, that all of that stuff just disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just there. You know, it's not about politics and it's not about like class systems or anything like that. You're just with your fellow people, just another person listening to music, and that's really what it's about for us.
You always genuinely look like you're having the time of your lives.
Well, that's a ridiculous job to have.
Is that professionalism, or is it genuinely every time you get together and play together, it just feels like there's some magic between
you? I'm so excited right now.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about what we're about to do. Because, like, I see Ted, right? And he's cool in this environment.
Yeah.
But when you look at Ted across, like, 40 metres away at this side of the stage, just rocking out.
It's incredible.
Like up on a drum riser.
It's incredible, man.
You look like you were built for this, Ted.
Yeah, I feel like I'm on the stage with a god, honestly.
Yeah. Sometimes I catch a glimpse of myself.
Ted, is there not part of you that thinks, though, with 60 days or however many there are ahead of you, do you not think, ooh, that's going to leave? That's going to take 10 years off my life?
It's the opposite, man, honestly. Yeah. It's all this, like, time off is a weird thing that you get when you're in a band, because you do all of your sort of work quite intensively over a tour or, you know, a condensed period of time, and then you go home. And everyone else is at work, and you're just sitting at home. So that's the bit that will knock the years off your life, I think. Yeah, no, the touring bit is literally what we're in it for.
It's not far off now.
Sense
the excitement.
Radio X. Gordon Smart. Radio X.
If you're a Chili's fan, some really good news popped up just the other day. Anthony Kiedis, he was at New York Fashion Week, and he'd spoken to a paper and said that a new album is on the way. That'll be their 12th studio album. No idea who's going to be producing this one. Danger Mouse did the last one, and before that they had 25 years of Rick Rubin, so it'll be interesting to see what's happening on this one. Another little thing that's very important in all matters, Red Hot Chili Peppers, he will be keeping the moustache. Anthony Kiedis said, if my son asked me to shave it, I'd shave it, but he loves it. So staying with the moustache, 12th album, don't know who the producer is, but it's massive news. The Chili's are back.
X. The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Ted and Ben from Mumford & Sons here. I've got a question for you, lads. What were the other runners and riders for your name when you first got together? We had an example the other day from the Kooks. They were called, going to be called Abe Goes West.
And
I just can't imagine life if you hadn't been called Mumford & Sons.
It's weird, isn't it?
Can you talk about it?
Do you remember the debate we had in that pub?
Yeah, in Fulham.
Yeah.
Which pub? In Fulham?
Yeah, it was the one on the bridge, on the north side of the what was it, Putney Bridge?
Yeah. By the rehearsal studio.
What kind of argument was it?
It wasn't an argument. I think there was just
like
50
names. Well, with our manager, I remember Adam sitting us down and being like, so before we get going, are you sure you're happy with the band name? And we're like, yeah, it's great. He's like, yeah, but maybe everyone's going to think that maybe you'll get confused by the fact you're Marcus's sons or something weird and... And we're like, don't be silly, that'll never happen. And also, no one cares or will ever listen to our music, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Fast forward to today, and it's,
We hadn't left London at that point. Right. We'd basically just done gigs in pubs in London, and I think we really just imagined our horizon being, maybe we can sell out a 300-cap show one day.
Yeah.
And so how important the band name was way insignificant compared to how we're going to pay for our rehearsal that day.
Yeah.
So we're like, yeah, it's fine, like, whatever, Adam.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I think we can all collectively say that we like our band name very much.
I think most bands can collectively say that. Yeah. Sorry,
it's certainly been an issue. Yeah.
Led Zeppelin.
So as you're heading off to do stadiums as well, I remember being in Wembley Arena with Chris Martin, Coldplay, and he was having a conversation about whether or not it was a good idea to have a train that went all the way around the arena while he sat on it and sang some of the songs.
He's so creative.
So the Spinal Tap moment, right? You know when you're talking about how you're going to do these shows, whether you be in the round or what kind of production you'll have, has there been a great Spinal Tap moment with Mumford & Sons where you said, no, we're not doing the death slide?
There's been quite a few. Yeah.
Come on.
What was one yesterday? What were we doing yesterday?
Wayne was talking about how they could shoot Fallon. And he's like, we could just have the audience facing away from us and we could do it in a round. And we were like, and as he was saying it, you could see him lose conviction in the idea. It was funny.
Absolutely, because we're going over to the States this weekend. We're going to go and do Jimmy Fallon, which is going to be the first bit of TV we do on this record. And we've actually acted out some things and implemented some ideas before. Right. One of them was, the house that we built. No one really saw this show, but for six shows, we built like a house that kind of
burnt down during the course of the show.
It was it was a real low point of our creativity.
But it wasn't our creativity, it was the thing, it was outsourced, and it was like, you know, it was just a bit of a communication breakdown.
So hold on,
you totally just exempted yourself.
A house burning down on stage.
we were in a big building that sort of comes apart and
catches
fire.
It was very high concept.
Yeah. Looked like a good idea on paper, lads. Yeah, we'll shuffle on, shall we?
Yes. Yeah.
Right, more from the boys. Are you okay? Stick around.
Definitely. Oh man, that's a relief. I want to move on from that for sure.
That's a relief. More from Mumford and Sons in just a second.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
The Evening Show. Classic Album of the Week. X.
Right, so this week's classic album, Block Party, A Weekend in the City, their second album, which came out in January 2007. That's 11 years ago. I remember it very well, Kelly Okereke turning up at just about every gig I was at with a backpack on. He was a bit of an enigma as well. Never really got a chance to speak to him or interview him because he was such a deep character. It was all about writing the music and communicating through albums like this. Already loads of messages coming in about this one tonight. Brian O'Keefe says, awesome album, headed to 3 Arena in October to see them. Cannot wait. Terrific band. Shrey Pernick as well. Oh, this one takes me back. And Sam Clear as well. Pumped about seeing them next month. Yeah, those live gigs will be really special. Apparently Kelly's just written a play as well. He's got an active mind, that man. So this album, A Weekend in the City, produced by Jackknife Lee, who you will know from Snow Patrol, R.E.M., The Killers and U2. Very talented man. It got to number 2 in the UK and number 12 in the US, which was a big success for them back then as well. Tracks included The Prayer, Waiting for the 718, Hunting for Witches, Where is Home, and on the re-release, Flux, which is a massive tune as well. Now, the band consciously wanted to distance themselves from the conventional indie rock band setup. And it was very different from Silent Alarm. They went a bit more electronic with this and added some strings as well. They were heavily influenced by more electronic art rock bands like Radiohead and New Order. And all the band members apparently just feel a little bit disillusioned with London at the time, so wanted to write an album critiquing it. So if you think about it, Kelly's lyrics, they touch on terrorism, sexuality, politics. He wanted to contrast the mundane as well, the waiting for a train, the boring nights out of nightclubs with the extreme experiences they were observing. Terrorism and rise in racism in London as well. It was a really lively time thinking back, not far off the London riots. Now the song Where is Home deals with Kelly's identity, and as I say, he's a bit of an enigma. A British man of African descent and the angst he was feeling at the time. I Still Remember, which is a great song, is about him exploring his homosexuality, or a lot about being discussed about it as well. Now, this all might sound quite heavy, but the album is full of massive, soaring choruses and uplifting moments too. Enemy called it tender and reflective, edgy and embittered, and All Music noted that the album's gradual move from alienation to connection and hope. So two songs for you, back-to-back, classic album tonight. It's a beauty as well. Weekend in the City, The Prayer, followed by Flux.
The Evening Show, classic album of the week. X.
Radio X.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart. The Evening Show. Classic Album of the Week.
X.
Our classic album tonight, Block Party, A Weekend in the City from January 2007, 11 years ago. Stefan Doyle's been in touch. Love, love, love these throwback tunes by Block Party. Cannot believe they're from 2007. We finished up there with Flux. That was the fourth single from the album. It was included on the re-release, got to number 8, and the song hints, well, more than hints, at the electronic group Block Party ended up going down. Fewer live instruments than usual, and there is one hell of a beat on that. There's some lovely remixes of it as well, if you fancy having a dig through. Before that, I played The Prayer, which was the lead single, got to number 4. Apparently, it was inspired by Busta Rhymes. Never knew that until this evening. It's a bona fide indie disco hit, though, and the lyrics are actually a little bit of a criticism of hedonistic, substance-fueled nights out. Now listen to that song in the background. Hunting for Witches. Do some serious stuff. Terrorism, the media's reaction to it. Kelly said, I guess the point about the song for me is post-September 11th, the media has really traded on fear and the use of fear in controlling people. You can hear those thoughts in the lyrics, but also in the troubling, glitchy music as well. It's anxiety around it, isn't there? The album title, Weekend in the City, is a comment on the theme of the album. Singer Kelly called it the living noise of a metropolis. Seems perfect, doesn't it? Right, I'll have another classic album for you next Monday night.
The Radio X Evening Show with Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
I'm about to explore the influences of the Vaccines. The Vaccines have been making infectious indie pop songs since 2011. And they're showing no signs of stopping, by the way. They're a band you have to see live. And they've got a surefire back catalogue of guitar hits. And just like the majority of guitar bands that got going in the mid-noughties, they owe a huge debt to the Strokes. You can see where we're going with this already, can't you? The Strokes emerged with their debut, Is This It?, in 2001. I was at university then, and it was a magical, magical moment. They changed the landscape of music. Julian, Nick, Albert, Nikolai, and Fabrizio re-energised guitar music and made skinny jeans cool again, just as the Trainspotting fashion sense was beginning to wear off. Their scuzzy riffs and super tight beats helped give birth to a worldwide indie revival just when it needed it, and the Vaccines were part of that movement. Check out the scratchy, distorted garage band guitar sound on Last Night. You couldn't escape that tune in 2002, and it's left its mark all over the indie scene. You can definitely hear its influence on the Vaccines' 2011 single, the surefire pop hit, Norgard. That sounds great, doesn't it? And the Vaccines boys have never tried to hide their love for the Strokes. Vaccines frontman Justin "The Face Young", as we call him, is on record saying the Strokes' Is This It? Is a 10 out of 10 record. He said it did everything that people want. It's so rare to find such a perfect band with such a perfect record. And the Vaccine Strokes loving got properly consummated in 2011. That's Tiger Blood, which the Vaccines brought out as a double A-side. And do you know who produced it? The Strokes guitarist, Albert Hammond Jr. A meeting of the minds, leather jackets and tight jeans, lucky boys. One last thing to bring to your attention. If you head over to the Vaccines YouTube channel, you can hear an interview with guitarist Freddie the Catwalk Cowan, as he's known to us. Guess who he was excited to see at Reading Festival back in the day?
When I was 14, I went to Reading Festival to see the Strokes. It was a great, really short set, but it was a great gig. And at the end, it was Julian Casablanca's birthday, and they kind of gave all the crowd birthday cake, and they played New York City Cops. And I wasn't really wired to deal with something like that then. I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen in my life.
There you go. The Vaccines and the Strokes sounds pretty smart to me.
Radio X. Gordon Smart.
Radio X.
Now, lads, I'm really hoping you can help me with my book, Slash Gordon. We've got an amazing back catalogue.
Didn't know you were a novelist?
It's highbrow, as you can imagine, yeah. A highbrow book. I'd like to think I'm really stretching the grey matter on this one.
Yeah.
It's all about... It started off for me with Sean Connery, right? Yeah, I bumped into him in the toilet. He's my hero.
Right.
You have to say something, don't you? I said hello. He just turned around and said, "Now's not really the time, is it?"
No,
so I was like, "That's good enough. I'm happy with that. I've gone. I've washed my dried my hands. I'm gone. Happy." Have you got a story you can share with us?
So it's not technically a bathroom story, but when we played at the Grammy Awards in 2011. And after we had played, we'd somehow managed to slip a bunch of quite a lot of alcohol into our situation. It's a dry event. People don't know this, but that award show is dry.
A long day as well.
Unlike our awards things, where everyone just gets as drunk as possible.
Yeah.
In the US, everyone's being quite well behaved, but we did it British style. And we got into the lift, and we were kind of packed in. We were being really boisterous, and then two like massive guys come in, like security. And then this just little kind of boy came in with... I just realised I'm saying this on radio. Yeah, he was very young. I mean, boy is a technical term, right? But it was it was Justin Bieber. And we were riding like six floors together. And it was just this silence in that elevator or lift, or I don't know which way around it is now, but I'm thinking in American terms. Was really painful.
Oh no, just nothing.
No,
well,
you...
yeah.
What did Wins? I'm trying to remember.
Wins. in a sort of slightly backhanded way, just said, "Oh, my little cousin's a really big fan of your music." Oh. But in a sort of like, it was, everyone was sort of in a whole.
You know what's ironic about that now?
Flipped out.
Because this is quite a few years ago, yeah. And now Winston absolutely loves Justin Bieber.
Does he really?
Yeah, true story.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe there'll be another awkward Lyft story.
Well, no, now I think it would be less awkward.
It would be all right.
Now I'd be like, you know, I'm really a big fan. Yeah, how are you doing? Yeah, let's collaborate.
A Bieber one. He's a new one in the book.
Yeah.
Sorry it's not more bathroom related. I'm racking my brains or something. But
there might be a better bathroom.
There'll be another chance, Ted. Don't you worry about
it. Okay, I'm going to nail it.
Well, here's another one that I'd like you to share with me. Now, just to offer some encouragement to young bands on the way through who've had an absolute stinker of a night on stage where things have gone horribly wrong. Could you share a Mumford's night where things went terribly? What's your worst gig?
I like the story about the gig we did in, was it Slough?
It's a good start already, isn't it?
Yeah, we were in this lovely pub in Slough. And it was the World... No, what was it? The World Cup?
Champions League final.
And Winston, being such a big Manchester United fan, thought he would go. So we were a man down playing a gig in Slough to... what was your friend Chloe?
Yeah, Chloe and her family.
Chloe and her mum and dad.
Yeah.
And the sound man and the barman. And halfway through the gig, you could see like the sound man was like, you know, sort of like reacting to, he was obviously watching it on his laptop. And he just came on the, you know, there was no one there. He just came on the monitors and was like, we can turn that TV around side of stage. You can watch the game as well, if you like. And so we did.
Didn't he start off by saying 1-1?
Yeah, between the songs, he was sort of giving us score updates.
You know how, like, normally,
rather than applause.
If you're checking your mic, you go like 1-2, 1-2. Just like 1-1.
That is sensational.
It was a bad gig.
Absolutely sensational.
What do you do after that? You know?
There's no comeback from that, is there? There's no way back.
Luckily, no one was there.
Dear me.
As long as no one ever finds out about that gig, we'll be alright.
Yeah, don't ever tell that story. Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in. And hopefully, we can do a bit more of this, actually, because if we haven't scratched the surface properly. Absolutely. Delta's coming soon, a massive tour ahead of you.
Yeah.
There's excitement. You're
starting
looking forward
it in
to
the
it.
UK.
Yes.
But all of that's going to be revealed.
That's all coming out the 4th of October, I believe. All right.
Look at that.
Yeah.
There's something going on.
There's like an inside track going on.
There is a tiny
Well, maybe we should come back and talk about the tour.
Well, come on then. Yeah, come on. It'd be lovely to see you. Well, look after you. Wrap yourselves in cotton wool until then.
We'll try.
Go easy on the whiskey.
Hey.
And chuck the cork away, boys.
That's the spirit.
Ted and Ben, thanks for coming in.
Cheers.
Best luck with Delta.
Mate.
Exciting times ahead. Radio X.